Hello, and welcome back once more to yet another episode of Man Reimagined. This week, we have another wonderful guest with us, a good friend of ours named Martin, who is joining us today to talk about a topic which is a little bit of a counterpoint to last week's topic, which was an exploration of fatherhood. This week, we're exploring singlehood, or what it's like to be a single man in the modern world, in the 21st century, in the 2020s. And so before we jump in and start talking with Martin, we have another single man in this podcast, and his name is Richard Ayling. So Richard, how are you doing, mate?
Hi, and thanks for singling me out there, pun intended. I'm great, Mal. I'm single. I'm 41. I'm proud of both of these things as much as I can be.
Beautiful. Awesome. So this tonight is going to be a really great topic, I think, and it's a topic that doesn't get talked about very much. But before we go into the topic itself, I'd like to introduce Martin van der Kay to the conversation. Martin, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mel.
Nice one. So, Martin, before we get cracking into this topic, do you want to take a moment and just introduce yourself and give the listeners a bit of info about who you are, where you are, your age, that kind of thing.
My name is Martin. I'm in a provincial town in New Zealand. I'm a born and bred Aucklander and spent most of my life there. I'm not there anymore. I've been involved with the Mankind Project for 15 years plus, got up to quite a decent leadership level in that. And I am currently single. I have been for about a year and a half. And prior to that, I was in a relationship for 16 and a half years. We were friends and my previous partner, not my ex, my previous partner, we were friends for 2.5 years before that. So I consider that sort of a roughly 20-year relationship. And continue.
Sorry, mate, did I interrupt your flow there by giving you a
No. I'm self-editing.
keep going. No, keep going. No need to self-edit on this in these conversations at Martin.
What I was going to say is we're still a little bit like you talked about. I can't remember her name. Sorry, with Richard, with the woman who's in Bali, the American woman.
Definitely.
My previous
Definitely.
partner and I are still very close friends. We call each other Kari, which means endeared one. And yeah, sure, there were some ups and downs to get to this place, but we're still very much a part of each other's life, and I'm actually very proud of that. And so we're still very, very close, because 20 years doesn't go past out of 20 of it's only 30 as an adult, so to speak. It's a significant period of time, and we know each other very well.
But well, and congratulations for maintaining a civil relationship, because I know a lot of people who have spent 20 years in relationship and can no longer stand the sight of each other. So well done for that, Marty. So the idea behind this podcast today is really to explore the ups and downs of what it's like being a single man. And because I actually think, from my perspective, and reflecting on this podcast, which is the exploration of men and where we are and where we can go, one of the things I don't think it's talked about much at all, probably a lot less so than fatherhood, is what it's like being a single man. And so one of the things that and one of the reasons we got you on this conversation, Marty, is you've been out of the game, if you like, or out of being single for a long time, and I can imagine that it has changed a lot. And Rich too, this is for just the evolution of what it's like being a single man, particularly as we age, I'm just curious to just to get the ball rolling, Marty. how's it been for you as an experience and all of a sudden being 50 and being single?
It's been incredibly fucking challenging. I chose it. My partner chose it. And there's reasons for that, and they were mutual, and needs and wants and roles changed over time. And I was really happy about it initially, and I still don't want it to go. I don't want to go back there. I still stick by my decision. But it's been a lot harder and a lot more challenging than I anticipated. I've had times of incredible loneliness, and I've spent a lot of time on my own in my adult life. And before that, making new friends as an adult in a new town has been really challenging. People unintentionally can be quite insular. And, you know, if they've got their partner or their whānau and their friends, they kind of don't realize that, oh, somebody's new and they might want to reach out and get connected, and that's okay, but and doesn't necessarily mean anything. And but that all the effort's on me to create that. They're just going about their business and having their lives. And I mean, I've made friends where I am, and that seems to be progressing quite well, but I've been here 3 months. The other part is there's aspects of being in a relationship I miss deeply. Probably the biggest one is like being touched. And also that applies to my friends. I'm in a new town, and I used to get lots of hugs from men and women, my work colleagues. I was loved in my old job. I'd go around and have a bunch of hugs first thing in the morning. I miss the intimacy of being in a relationship. And when I say intimacy, I don't mean sex. I miss that too. But more like just that sitting, watching telly, holding hands, rubbing each other's neck, head, whatever. That just that familiarity of knowing somebody so well that you want to be connected physically. And just sharing. Just sharing, how'd your day go? Just that check-in at the end of the day. How'd your day go? How are you feeling? You know, stopping and have a look, you know, maybe a glass of wine or a cup of tea or whatever, and just going, how'd your day go? And you know, having somebody to come home to and look forward to seeing them rather than coming home. I bought a house up here, but, you know, I come home and there's nobody home.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hear the adjustment and the changes there. I mean, so I'm going to actually jump over to you, Richie, because I'm curious to know, you know, the same question for you. You know, how are you finding being single? You were part of the conversation last week when we were all, you know, the three dads were on that conversation, and now, you know, and you were the single guy. Now I'm the married guy with two single guys. So for me, I'm curious, you know, Rich, how is it for you as a single 40-year-old single man?
Well, I first want to kind of throw back and plant a seed for you in that the things that Martin shared, are they things that you are super grateful for all the time, or are they actually things that you tend to take for granted? Because for me, it feels like the grass is always greener on the other side.
And
I actually, I couldn't more identify with everything that Martin said. I've been in and out of relationships over the years. I haven't had a long stretch in one for a while, and I'd just be repeating what he said, but all of those things for me are really things that I miss. You know, touch is a big love language for me. I like giving, I like receiving. I don't get to experience that. And I was living with a woman, a good friend that we had on the show, actually, not so long ago, for 2.5 years. And that was platonic, and that was great. Like that, so some of those needs were fulfilled. But when you're in a relationship, looking forward to coming home to actually like sharing, connecting, and touching, and all of the things that Martin said, like, I haven't had that for a while. And yeah, there are bouts of loneliness for sure. I think it's healthy to be able to say that sometimes I'm lonely, and because the human experience is lonely. But and I wonder if that's also the same in relationship sometimes. Is it because I'm single that I'm lonely, or is that just a part of the human experience? So two questions to throw back at you, my friend.
Well, I think that I think that last bit about the loneliness is a really interesting one, and I think it is absolutely possible to be lonely in relationship, without a doubt. You know, it's so easy to get into routines and not connect into your partner at all. And I know that with my wife and I, you know, we've gone through stages like that. We nearly separated, I think, because we were kind of in one of those stages. So without a doubt, that's in and out of a relationship. I think that is a common refrain, certainly in my experience anyway. So what was the second part? there were two questions that you threw back at me. One was about the loneliness, and the second one was about the coming home to
the things that Martin had said that he really misses, you know, the negative sides of being single that I also resonate with. Are they things that you take for granted, or you know, are you really grateful for the things that we were talking about, and
probably take for granted to the point where I don't actually, it's really possible to not appreciate it. It's like that, the same thing with being lonely and being in relationship and being lonely. If I'm not paying attention to actually connecting into my wife, into Evelyn, then it's so easy to actually to miss that. It's and in some ways it's almost worse, because there's a sharing of life with somebody without actually sharing a life, you know, sharing any of the intimacy or sharing any of these human experiences that you're missing. So I know from my own experience that I've you know, if I reflect back on all my relationships that haven't worked, you know, I could say without a doubt that all of them, before the separation actually occurred, we were living a life where there was the stuff that you're saying you're missing. What, you know, I was missing in that relationship, you know, the connection and the intimacy and that stuff, you know, and so it's I think I certainly know that I have to really pay attention to my relationship in order to get what you guys have just said that you were missing, without a doubt.
Interesting, man. Really interesting. I'm glad I raised that point, and it's good to hear actually. But without us diving into relationships too much, I kind of want to bring back to Martin and talk about us poor single men. flip the script and actually just talk about like what's fucking awesome about being single again. And Martin, if I can ask you, like, what have been the joys of being single again? What have you rediscovered about yourself or the world? Like, let's pick this up. Tell me the good stuff, you know, like, I mean, not to balance out for the sake of it, you know, but we're trying to paint a realistic picture about what it means to be single, especially at, you know, the age of 40 and 50. But what's the good stuff?
Well, that's part of the learning, is I can do whatever I want whenever I want without consultation, but yeah, I think that without getting too contrite about it, I think human beings are meant to be together, whether it be man-woman, man-man, or woman-woman, or any variation thereof, if we're going to include full non-binary. We're social creatures, and I'm not ready to be in relationship again. But the thing I'm present to, or have been present to recently, is just missing friendship, because I moved outside of my friendship circle. I do have some friends up here, and I'm rapidly, I actually wrote a list the other week and talking about gratitudes and went, well, actually I've made 10 new friends in 3 months. That's actually pretty good going. And some of them have become quite close friends quite quickly. what are the awesome things about being single? I mean, being honest and being vulnerable and I chose not to be in the relationship I was because it hadn't been working for a while, but I actually think I probably prefer being in relationship than not. However, you know, in regards to attachment styles and things like that, I think there's some things I still needed to learn in my life around that, around watering my own garden and the difference between love and sex. And a kiss is not a contract. And I think that's partly probably what led to me not being in relationship is, you know, having certain roles and expectations about, well, we're together, so I ought to get the X, Y, and Z. And if I'm not, then I can get ho-ha about that or pissed off about that and blame you for that. Whereas going forward, and that's what I've been reflecting on and using the time on my own, is figuring out, well, how am I going to roll next time? Getting back to your original question about, well, what are the pros of being single? Well, I did experience kind of being single a little bit like what Malcolm touched on, like that was part of the reason I'm not in that relationship anymore, as I, for me, I ended up spending too much time on my own. And in the end, I kind of went, well, why am I in relationship and doing this, this, and this to keep this relationship going, but I'm actually spending so much time on my own, and that's actually not what I want from a relationship. I want to spend more time together. So the advantages of being single, I mean, being honest, they're not really coming to the fore right now, apart from I can do whatever I like whenever I want. But I had a huge amount of freedom to do that when I was in relationship as well. So it's not hugely different. It's more about connection for me. I'm really wanting to be connected, and that's what was missing, and it's still missing.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, thanks for your honesty, right? I mean, I had the sense that I didn't want to just balance things out for the sake of it. And I'm hearing you say that, well, actually it's pretty challenging, right? And my sense is it's around age. Like I'm 40, and again, I resonate with this desire for meaningful connection and to build something with someone, you know, it really means a lot for me, to me. And I crave it, and I crave intimacy that is, and the difference, you know, that isn't sex, right? There's this, no one understands these things, and I'm ready for this relationship, and I yearn for it. And my sense is a lot of people out there do as well. And so I'm looking at myself back when I was 30, it wasn't such a big deal. I think around that time, we're more playful. We know we've got more time as men and women, but when we're, you know, women in their kind of like 35 plus, of course, if they want kids, then that becomes more of a factor for them. It's super unfair that that's the difference. We as men have a bit more time. But my sense is there's actually a lot more people waiting, you know, and having higher expectations. And I think there's a lot more people out there, in, you know, singles out there. It's a huge number. I think I read somewhere not long ago that there's something like more than 50% of people in America are single. And it's just like, what? Again, America is not the world, but there's a lot of us out there. Imagine, no offense. There's a lot of us out there, and we're waiting and waiting and waiting. We're getting, for me, it seems we're getting more and more choosy / we're having higher standards. But at what cost is my question. Like, so what's your sense as a man in your current situation, able to answer that, of course, only for yourself?
So just reframe the question a little bit more briefly, that people are getting more choosy at what cost? Is that basically it?
Yeah, didn't you get that from my long rambling? Yeah, sorry.
Well, I Yeah, so that, I mean, we'll get to it in a bit, but regarding the dating apps, I've had a lot more success on them when I was just looking for friendship rather than partnership or dating. And choosing women from what their interests and values are rather than what they look like. And realizing that actually, you know, dating can be fun, but I'm actually just more after friendship at the moment and connection. And yes, I would like to have that deeper connection and or girlfriend, but I have to be patient. That takes time. Those connections take time, and I can't expect it to happen overnight. And I'm not somebody who, you know, lots of the women on the dating apps say no ONS, no DTF, ONS is one night stand. And it's like, yeah, well, that's not what I'm up for either, but gives a chance to just connect. And yet they're so gun shy. They're so cautious, and with good reason, in my opinion. But I'm not one of those guys that they're gun shy of, and I never have been. So I feel like even though I'm willing to be, or I am responsible for what men as a group have done to women, I'm not one of those men. And I can appreciate that, but I do feel like I'm paying the price a little bit now as a mature man who knows what he's about, who's done a lot of personal growth. I have to go through all these filters and these steps to even get to any sense of depth.
I totally resonate with that. I've had a similar experience. And just thank you for pointing out that, you know, there's a reason that women are kind of very hesitant and resistant, especially to meeting in real life after these online kind of situations. I totally understand and respect that. We do have to go through these hoops, and yeah, rightly so, based on, you know, how certain men have acted over the years. So I get that. Where does that leave us? Like, as it feels like the energy that we put out wants to be met, right? And I'm finding connections with women here and there in this way, but it's not through these dating apps. You know, it's through real life. Like, I how do you, coming back in as a 50-year-old man, let's just be real about the age and you know what that means for your technological experiences, right? Like, how does these apps work for you? Have you tried them? I mean, how do you feel about them?
Yeah, I'm pretty over them, to be honest. I think they're a load of bollocks. I've done a little bit I've dabbled. But yeah, I've realized that probably the type of woman that I'm looking for are probably not the same type of woman that are putting themselves out on those apps. And I just need to go old school. And I think, you know, when I was in my 20s and my 30s, I didn't even need to try. I wasn't necessarily looking. I'd go to parties. I'd meet my friends. I'd meet my friends' flatmates. And you go, oh, she's nice. And they'd go, oh, you're nice. And we'd just, you know, there weren't even cell phones, or hardly back then. Do you want to do something? Yeah, great. And it just naturally developed. To me, where I've got to with the apps, although it seems to be sort of one of the only modalities, but that's not true. There's lots of different community groups, whether it be permaculture groups or sports clubs that I have yet to get involved with, or dancing, you know, like salsa dancing or rock and roll dancing. I think that's more the way I'm going to go. There's something about the apps about sort of trying too hard or not. No, sorry, I'll take that back. Trying to make something happen, and that for me, that will just happen when I'm ready and when I meet that person who's also in that place as well. And that just happened for me, and you could call me an old fart, but I think that's the more natural way. I just need to put a bit more effort into getting into these groups, socializing, creating extra social circles. And one thing I read is never refuse a social invite. Even if I don't think I'll be, you know, some random guy at work or woman at work says, come to this barbecue. And it's like, no, I'm busy. I'm tired. I can't be bothered. You never know. I never know. I will never know. I might bump into somebody there who I didn't and you know.
Marty, I'm just going to jump in there because I think you know, I can almost say that's true. Never refuse an invite. I think even people in relationships, I think that is actually some really good advice that we could all heed, because it's actually one of the downfalls, I think, of relationship is actually slipping into routines that begin to create a closed world. You know, I certainly know for myself, you know, I have to remind myself, you know, accept the invitation, because the comfort of being at home, you know, one of the downsides of that in the comfort of having a partner and coming home to a partner is that it can create a lack of reaching out and exploring and meeting people, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's in a smaller New Zealand town. That's the insularity or the insularness that I'm referring to. People don't mean to do it, and I totally did that myself. I totally did what you're just talking about. And even to my old friends, I was like, I ought to be able to get all my needs and wants met within this relationship, and that wasn't the way to go either. And it probably put a little bit of too much pressure on my previous partner and myself. She's very gregarious and was often out. And I was like, well, why don't you just want to spend more time with me? And I don't want to go down that whole road, but that was part of the mismatch.
Yeah.
And part of the solution was for me to get more, not expect or want or think everything was going to come from the relationship. So I totally hear you. And I totally agree and understand, and I won't be doing that again in the future.
So you know, one of the, you know, when you're just talking about the dating apps, and you know, I have to say that for me, you know, to you, Richard, Marty, you know, I've been in relationships that have meant that I have never ever been on a dating app, and I have to say that it terrifies me. You know, I'm listening to you, Marty, talking about the process of coming back out onto it, and I find that my read on it, the way that I view it, my judgment of it, is that it's quite an impersonal process of basically having to make judgment calls on somebody, you know, from a couple of pictures and a written piece. It just feels so difficult to ascertain. You know, you can't even judge by the way that they stand or the way that they're moving or the way that, you know, which is what you might do when you go out at the bar or meet somebody at a club or something. It just feels like such a shift, such a rapid shift and change that I personally find that I almost can't even get my head around it.
Well, I'd like to speak to that a little bit, Amal, so there's the impersonal aspect of it, but also how people look on their pictures and whatnot can be enhanced or changed. And actually my experience is that woman who I met up with actually looked a lot better in person than they did in the pictures. But the other thing that's changed, talking to some guys who are like in their 30s and they've been in a long-term relationship, and people say, well, how'd you meet? And they say, oh, the old-fashioned way on Tinder. Well, Tinder has changed a lot too, is that these days, and that's the frustrating thing about it, a bit like Facebook and the algorithms, you have to pay. It used to be free. But to find out who you match with or to get the extra bits or to see who's liked you, you have to pay. And we're not talking bickies here, like, you know, about $50 to $100 a month. And I'm not willing to do that.
Ouch. That's
hang on. Sorry. Like, just to as someone that's been on and off Tinder and finally decided that it just is not for me, there is a free version that works, you know, just well enough. If you want the extra privileges of finding out who's been looking at you and all this kind of weird stuff in my eyes, then you have to pay. But there is a free function that totally serves. It just means that you have to trust in that who you've said yes to may come back to you. You can't go any further than that. So if you're willing to kind of leave it at that distance, then it works and you don't have to pay for it. But I agree with you that we are commodifying how to fall in love and meet people. And that's definitely a big problem.
Yeah, and I have only been using the free version and I'm not willing to pay for more. However, as Malcolm said, it's quite depersonalized, i.e. one needs to put oneself out there, but one has no idea whether that person's seen you or anything more. And if they match with you, then great. But if not, like, you're just kind of looking at stuff and it's all just random from my point of view. There's no feedback loop. And for somebody who's seeks deep connection, a bit like you, Richard, I find that very dissatisfying because there's not even a conversation that's occurring. There's no feedback at all.
Yeah, I feel yeah. I also find that it's extremely brave for people to actually put themselves out on these things because, you know, there's factors that we don't talk about which need to be addressed. Like, you know, depending on how attractive you are, that's going to impact things a lot, right? And there are people, men and women, that put themselves out on there that kind of objectively you would say like aren't the most attractive people in the world, and yet they have the balls, pardon the sort of gender bias in the expression, to actually put themselves out there, right? And just go, I'm going to put myself out and see what happens. And kind of the rejection is it's constant because unless you get something yes. back, right? And so it's, without wanting to stick too long on dating apps, I think, but what have we lost? And how often is it? Like I was lamenting as I do just the other day on how, I think I watched the film Lost in Translation, and it's just two people kind of connecting from a disconnect in another country. And there was something just so basic about them just going out to these places. And it's like, when's the last time that people really take a chance? What's happened to romance? Maybe I'm super off the mark here. I don't know that. Maybe I'm really showing my age, but like going up and approaching somebody else, like there's the conversation for me also around, like there is still a general expectation in society, I believe, that it's still the guys who kind of have to do the you know, best foot forward and make the approach. And so women have they have more to deal with and more no's to say to. So they have their own challenges around that. But it's still the man that has to kind of make that approach. And how to do that in today's society, there's lots of questions around what is okay and what not. And so I speak for myself when I say that there's a lot of confusion around what's appropriate and what's not. Whereas in the past, it was a much easier for me in my own mind, at least, without the kind of social pressure that perhaps is in my mind, just to go up to a woman and say hi, although I was too shit scared to do it as a kid. And now I'm an adult. there's kind of, how do we even do this anymore? So again, there's a lot there, just no particular question, but what do you think?
Well, one thing I have learned that's kind of blown me away, you know, being somebody who believes in being honest and integrity is a few women, one of them who I'm still in touch with and seems to be developing into a really cool friendship, is they don't put their real names on these apps. And, you know, after chatting for a bit or after the first meetup, they say, by the way, my name's not so-and-so, such and such. And I'm like, but that's quite a red flag for me, because if you're not being honest about that, what else are you not being honest about? And then, I learned something. So they don't put their real names on there. And I was kind of like, well, what's the matter? Your picture's there, blah, blah, blah. And they told me it's because you only need a first name and a town, especially in a smaller town I'm in. And you Google that and there's your predator, there's your stalker.
Right.
And a couple of them have had that experience and I was just blown away. And they actually coached me to take my workplace off, to put less information on it. And I was like, holy fuck. And I get it. And I was actually felt deeply hurt by that. And it's not me. But I totally understand now. So I actually expect it now. You know, it might not occur in Auckland. It's probably a bit trickier there because there's a lot more people there. But yeah, just that's occurred. I found quite shocking.
Yeah. So I want to kind of take another little tack with this conversation. Because one of the things that I've always been quite curious about is how well we as a society support single men. You know, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked a little bit in this podcast, you know, particularly last week, we looked at, you know, married men and fathers. And, you know, we've talked a bit about, I know I've there's this piece around fatherhood and do fathers get the support they need. But I'm really curious for single men, you know what, and I'm going to throw this to you, Rich, to begin with. You know, how do you feel the support is for single men? And that can be in many different ways. It can be, you know, just whether it's society, you know, how society views it as whether it's a good or a bad thing. But you know, you know, there's the financial aspect, there is the emotional aspect. You know, what's your opinion there, Rich? And then Martin, you can have a go after that.
Well, even as you were talking, I was struggling to link these ideas together, like support and single men. There's a part of my brain going, we've got freedom, we can do what we want, we have advantages. What do they need support for? So, I mean, I can imagine, but can you give me a couple of examples of support that you think they might need?
Well, I mean, you know, you and I did this podcast a wee while ago about male mental health, male suicide and things like that, you know, and so there's this isolation, you know, there's the potential isolation of single men, of being single. But, you know, another thing, just, and I'm just curious, I don't know what the answer is, but you know, there's a sense of you know, in a relationship, financial burdens are shared, emotional burdens are shared, but when you're on your own, obviously you're dealing, yes, there's a lot of freedom, but you're having to carry all of that. And I'm thinking in New Zealand, for example, and Martin, you know this yourself, right? You know, cost of living has just gone through the roof with things like housing and whatnot. And so the pressure of being single around that can be quite intense. And so I was just curious about how you feel about it.
So I still think there is, and this is again from me speaking to a lot of men on the subject, there's a general expectation that the man needs to provide in some way. And I know there's plenty of women out there that are like, no, you don't. And I want that as well. I want that kind of more of a balanced, right? Or at least the discussion around like a conscious choice rather than expectation or societal pressure. But for a lot of men, there's a sense of, I need to be able to provide. And a sense of, if I'm not doing that right now, then how can I have value or offer value in a relationship? So that's definitely something that's felt like an undercurrent for a lot of men that I've spoken to. And as to support, yeah, there isn't any. I mean, my feeling is, and that's what we're trying to do with just by having conversations like this and doing the work that we do, is to try and normalize men coming together and actually sharing like their struggles and finding solidarity within each other that goes beyond sport and you know, a few beers. Like there's so much more depth, and that's what the value of a circle is. And yet there's not really enough conversation out there. I think just as you and I started to really get serious about putting this podcast out, I mean, we had the conversation last August, but then it was about January, February by the time we actually got our shit together. which speaks volumes, but there you go. But in that time, in that time, we noticed other podcasts and things kind of appearing. So it feels like there is an awareness that, you know, men need more support around this area. but it's pretty vapid. It's not particularly organized. And I'm more worried, actually, the more I think about it, about the younger men, like and how they're kind of connecting in, because older men have their struggles, but if they're in family, if they're in relationship, there's something there and that they can share wisdom. But for younger men that are going through financial pressures and trying to figure out what it means to be a man today, and emotional pressures around that, like all men are evil, smash the patriarchy, these kind of conversations that are also happening. It's like, how the fuck do we make sense of this on our own if we're not communicating? And if we haven't normalized the idea of coming together, then what kind of support does exist? And I don't know. And the final point is, there's still a stigma from a lot of men around asking for help, seeking therapy, support, coaching feels much more business oriented. Women are diving into personal development. Men are really holding themselves back. And that's kind of why I'm so passionate about this, but it's a problem. That's my bleak response to your question.
Yeah, it's interesting. And thanks for that. And Marty, I'm really curious to hear what your thoughts are. And because it does strike me that, it's this idea that why would men need support being single? Why would that's my interpretation of it. And it's just like, and actually, well, there's hundreds of reasons why we need support. But what's your experience been, Marty? And how do you feel you are supported? And even, this relates to a conversation that you and I had yesterday, where, you and I kind of acknowledged that you needed. There were times when you needed just support from me, from your mate, and there have been some times when I hadn't been there for you. And so, how do you feel your support? You are supported as a newly single man.
How much time have I got?
Yeah, mate.
so I got triggers going off left, right, and centre because Richard touched on a few things, talked about money, duties, roles. So can I break it down for you in sections?
Yes,
I'll try and be brief. So I'm lucky enough that I owned a house in Auckland. I was bought out and I managed to buy a house up here. But yes, it's a challenge. I need to do all the roles, all the duties round home. If I don't cook dinner, I don't eat. Just for example, whereas that was shared before, and it takes something more. And sometimes it's a drag, and I don't want to live on takeaways either. So that's speaking to that really briefly. Money. Yes. I have, less money here than I did. I still have enough. I have less, obligations. It's going to get better, but that's been a bit more challenging as well. And I'm used to having money left over when I get paid again, and I don't anymore. Roles, massive trigger for me, Richard. You talked about that on a previous podcast, and that was a massive trigger for me. I think part of the reason that perhaps I went down the wrong track in my previous relationship was I had it in my mind. So I'm a generation X. I was born in 1970 that I needed to be the provider, and I didn't. And I think I got stuck and hooked on that. And if I'd given that up, that probably would have created a lot more space for other things to occur. I earn a good living. And I thought that I needed to keep working 50 plus hours a week, shift work, to provide. And every time I brought that up, my previous partner said, no, well, you don't. And I didn't get that while I was in relationship. That can't see the wood for the trees. Again, I get that. And it cost me happiness. And it cost me compromise and happiness in my relationship. If I'd perhaps worked less and started to focus on other things I was more passionate about rather than just doing my job to make money because I thought I needed to be the provider, then I might be somewhere different, but that's all hypothetical. Support for the single man. Well, yeah, I'm triggered by that as well. So I'm pretty unique. My parents split up in 1980 when I was 10 years old. Both my parents passed. My dad about 20 years ago. My mum about 3 years ago. I have one sister. I have probably some attachment issues. I probably have some belonging issues based on how I was brought up. And yeah, support's a really big deal for me. And I found a lot of that in the Mankind Project, which isn't perfect either. But a lot of my friends, as I said before, are my whānau. Family and whānau is something that I probably crave the most, but it also scares me the most. So I'm probably slightly unique in that wanting to be loved and needed kind of gets a little bit mixed up for me. So support is, as you discovered last night, Malcolm, from my friends is kind of integral to who I am, because as I discovered this time last week when we were discussing what it means to be family in the context of the nuclear English European family versus an extended Maori or Polynesian one, and that all members of the family are equal, really got me thinking about my identity that I have around that.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of good juice that you just put in there, Marty. And one thing I am going to say that I don't think you're unique. From what you've described, I think that's pretty more common than you would think. And also, not just in for men too, but you know, so much of what you said would very easily be men and women going through that same process and same experience, I think. So, you know, we've spent quite a bit of time in this conversation, you know, talking about the experience of being, you know, being single and what it's like and what you've learned from it. What I want to, the last part of this conversation, where I'd like to steer it to now, then the question, it's a couple of questions that I'd like to finish off with, just a couple of big questions. But the first one is really is, you know, how, and this is for both you, Rich, and Marty, you know, how do you think that we as men can show up differently in this space of being single? You know, what is it that we can begin to maybe step into, grow into a bit more? And I'm going to leave it there. Rich, would you like to maybe start with that one?
So what I'm trying to do is probably the best way to start this sentence. And it seems to be landing from what I'm how I'm talking about it with other people as well and other men, is to find solidarity with other men. I'm going to bash that point until we start doing it. And two, learn what it is that you want from a partner and make damn sure that you can offer that yourself. Like, that would be the key thing for me in terms of approaching relationships as a single man or as a single human. It's non-gender specific. That is a really important point for me. I'm having great conversations with people that are good with being by themselves and not, of course, would like to be in partnerships, but want it for the right reasons. Like, yes, I have needs and all of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, I miss these things, but these are healthy things that humans want from each other, right? But I'm also good by myself and I've done enough work around that. So that would be, those would be the two things I would say. Martin, what would you think?
Yeah, I'd echo you that. As I said before, I think, you know, part of my, because I am the way I am, I perhaps probably looked for too much in a relationship where I ought to have found that in myself first. What's that thing, you know, how can you love another if you don't love yourself first? That old thing of like, rather than two halves of a circle. Hey, let's be honest here too. Our culture and, you know, films, Disney, all of that talks about this, you know, you'll be complete when you find da-da-da. When in actual fact, if we're two whole circles that join rather than two half circles that make a complete, I think we're indentured and cultured to believe all this. And, you know, even, you know, fairy tales, Sleeping Beauty and all of that. So for me, going forward now, knowing what I've learnt and that I still have more to learn, I think that, you know, being really clear about the basics and being really upfront about who I am and what I'm about, knowing that that's okay and that's enough. And I don't need to be anything. I don't need to, yes, there's compromise in relationships. Of course there is. But if it doesn't work for me, I can say, well, this doesn't work for me, but hey, can we work this out? I don't have to make these massive compromises in order to be loved or wanted, and that I can be loved, accepted, and wanted just as I am, just for me, just as I am. I don't need to change myself or be guided by what my partner needs or wants. That's not my primary thing. I need to be guided by what's inside and what my values are. Values based is what I'm learning. Stick to, if I get stuck, go back to my values. And it's okay to say no.
Wow. I kind of just want to acknowledge that that's such a huge part of it. Like this, the journey of discovering the self and being okay with it. And I love your metaphor of like two complete circles kind of somehow joining. It's not this like half and half thing, which never works, right? Like this codependent dynamic. And thank you, because that's what I offer. And that's what I talked about a couple of weeks ago. That's kind of what I'm trying to help other people do, because that's the journey I've been on. So much so that I actually forgot to mention how important that is. You know, it's like, oh yeah, and the journey of the self, oh yeah, and that, right? Like a part of that is like, that's what I mean, like learning with somebody else, like what you want from them must be what you can already offer yourself, right? Otherwise you're just going to be projecting all of this stuff, and okay, they've got money, or they've got security, they've got safety, they've got all of these things that I don't have. It's like, we know how that works out from experience, most of us, and some of us can get out in time, some of us end up in very long marriages like that, and it's complicated. And so this is the work that I feel, again, women are diving more and more into, and men like yourself, I mean, you're on that journey, man. And the Mankind Project, maybe it's worth, as we wrap things up, giving a shout out, because we haven't talked about it enough. You've been in there 15 years. Malcolm, you've been a part of it for probably 10 or something, I think 11. And I'm learning
about
from
12,
both of you.
12, 13.
Right. And I've learned so much from this. So, and this is a way for men finding solidarity with each other, right? So as a useful tool and a way for people listening to actually take action and be inspired by, I mean, men's circles, there's millions out there. I mean, mine's the best. Followed by nothing.
Well, actually, I'd like to speak to that. Richard. I was involved with Mankind Project for a long time. I have not been involved with it for about 3 years. Where I'm at the moment is I'm actually interested in co-gender circles. I'm interested in any circle work, but I'm actually more interested in co-gender circles. And if I can't find one where I am, I will start my own.
What's co-gender? That's a new phrase for me.
Well, men and women, men and woman. What, men and woman and other? Like,
there's another podcast right there, my friend.
not just men. Like, so Mankind Project worked for me for a long time, but I think I need something more or different.
because you've been on the journey of finding solidarity with other men. Like, can I just stress that? Like, for people out there, like, that haven't found, been on that journey yet, is, let's not open a can of worms, but I mean, you've been on that journey, right? So now you're wanting the stage two, which is, and again, that's my personal reflection on what I find.
No, that's accurate. That's accurate. Mm. Yeah. And I'm not adverse to men's circle, but in all this change and tumultuousness and change of relationship, I've actually, to be honest with you, I've probably gone away from it when I actually probably should have gone towards it more.
Mm.
And I miss it.
Well, Martin, we've got a circle on tomorrow night that you can join. So, yay! So I'm gonna, you know, having just heard this, it feels like a really nice place to begin to wrap this conversation up, because I feel as if we've kind of spanned quite a few little different topics of being single and the experience of it, but also this last little piece around, you know, what is it, you know, what is it we're learning and what is it that we can take forward? And I think, you know, for me, you know, as Richard and I all along, this whole idea of the man reimagined is about us stepping into a new potential as human beings. And I feel as if we've begun to explore that through this conversation as men, and particularly as single men. So I just want to thank you, Martin, for joining us, mate. It's been a real pleasure having you on this call, my friend. And Rich, you too, man. Thank you for your openness and sharing about this topic as well.
Pleasure as ever. Hopefully we're getting somewhere.
Mm. Yeah, hopefully we are getting somewhere. Martin, have you got any final words you'd like to say before we finish this conversation?
I'd like to acknowledge you both. I've been listening along since the beginning. And I've learned a lot from, we talk about circles. I have circles of two with about half a dozen men around the world. But listening to you two and the conversation, and I think it was Karina that said, the one that really blew my mind initially was when Karina interviewed you two. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from that, and I had about three or four big, deep ahas. And so I've been listening along. So I consider this another little circle. And and as she said, the important part with this is we don't necessarily, and like you say in your lead-in, we don't necessarily have the solutions, but I think being in the conversation, whether it be men, women, whether it be men, whether it be race, I think having the conversation and having the courage and the willingness to have that conversation, be open about it and go, oops, ouch, or, I didn't get that very well, and to zip it and listen, I think that's what's important. And that's another place that I've been finding connection, is to just be vulnerable and put it out there and not pretend or hide or I had this relationship, but be vulnerable and go, yeah, I was in this relationship and I've moved towns. I'm not trying to get away from it. I wanted to do this anyway. But that's actually created a higher level of connection, of sharing and being willing to be vulnerable and share, has actually worked better than pretending everything's okay and not saying anything. And great, having a conversation and sharing.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Martin. Appreciate those lovely words and your sharing your experience in this call, man. Your vulnerability and openness has been much appreciated, my friend. And we'd like to wish you all the best. Sayonara, Rich. Sayonara, until we speak again, eh?
Where's the Japanese coming from?
Oh, well, you know, we've got to throw something new in each week.
Fair dues, brother, man. Been a pleasure talking to both of you. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Until next week.
Hi, I'm Malcolm Nichols.
And I'm Richard Ayling.
And this is Man Reimagined, a podcast where we as men attempt to reimagine ourselves in the 21st century.
How can we respond to the big questions that we're facing, both within ourselves and within society, and make sense of this ever-changing world?
We don't have all the answers, but we do want to create a conversation. So join us moving forward as a man reimagined. From this week's podcast, if there's been anything that's inspired you, challenged you, or simply left you wanting more, then please reach out to Richie and Mal via their Facebook page, Man Reimagined. Just like you, we're trying to get a handle on all of these issues and topics, so the more we're able to share and talk about them, I think the better off we're all going to be. Until next time, catch you later.